Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Are you ready to rumble? Welcome to tonight's program. Hey, U.S. Senator Debbie Stabenow of Michigan is co-sponsoring some legislation that would keep members of Congress from being paid if there is a government shutdown. Well, now that's, I mean, wouldn't that go without saying that it's a government shutdown? Bless her heart. I'm not, certainly not bad-mouthing Debbie Stabenow. Bless her heart. I love it. She said it's very important that members of Congress be held accountable. Mm-hmm. She said, with the potential shutdown looming, it's not fair that senators and reps would continue to be paid while many other federal government workers would not be paid. And I certainly agree. Stabenow signed on to the bill, which is being sponsored by Barbara Boxer of California. However, I like this part. In recent days, majority Democrats in the Senate and majority Republicans in the House have reportedly moved closer to a deal that could, for 2 weeks at least, forestall the government shutdown. Well, it didn't happen earlier today. I mean, didn't they? Where is it? Yeah, here it is. The House today passed a two-week budget measure. Well, now that was, you know, I'm pretty sure it was Debbie Stabenow and Barbara Boxer holding a gun to their heads saying, boys, girls, your paycheck is involved here, too. Of course, it really doesn't matter to members of the House and the Senate, really, especially the Senate. How many millionaires are in the Senate now? Of the 100 senators, how many have net worths of $1 million or more? 60? 70? I mean, it's beyond belief. Democrat and Republican, that's the reason that both parties, Republicans more than the Democrats, but both parties continue to push the knife between our third and fourth ribs. They really do, you know. So, today, the fascist-controlled House of Representatives passed a two-week budget measure that cuts $4 billion in federal spending. And Senate Democrats said they would quickly follow suit. Oh, yes, we love being led. Which averts any threat of a government shutdown when money runs out Friday. But. There's always a but, huh? There's always a big but. Especially when you deal with Republicans. Big but. The measure, approved by a bipartisan vote of 335-91... extends only through March 18th, which allows little time for the Republican-led House and the Democratic Senate to get over their divisions over how much money to allocate to federal agencies for the remainder of the fiscal year that runs until the end of September. So what's going to happen? According to New York Times, in a sign of continuing partisan tensions over spending, it's not overspending, New York Times. God damn it, why don't you stop it? Oh, I know. It's okay. Never mind. But none of this is about spending. None of this. But let's pretend it is. In a sign of continuing partisan tensions over spending, Democrats said that Speaker John Boehner had rejected overtures from the White House and Senate to approve a 30-day extension with $8 billion in spending cuts to provide some breathing room for the broader negotiations. Well, why should the Republicans cut any deals at all? I mean, these are God's chosen. I mean, they have a freshman class in the House under Boehner's greasy, slippery command of, what they have, freshman class in 91? 91 new Republicans, and they're all bagger freaks? Why should there be any compromise at all? Why should Boehner? Look, Boehner's just doing what his constituency says do, or your ass is grass. Oh, no, I'm not talking about the people back in Ohio. No. I'm talking about the teabaggers in his party. They're warning him. You do it this way, you goddamn drunk, or you're out! And we'll put Eric Cantor in your place. What I read the other day, a lot of people in the U.S. House are watching Eric Cantor, and no one's watching him closer than John Boehner. The noble Brutus have told you Caesar was an ambitious man. If it were so, it were a grievous fault, and grievously hath Caesar paid for it. Oops. Never mind. Republicans said the Senate had already been too slow to act and that the new proposal from the president, you know, the guy, yeah, and Democratic leaders came too late since the House is already preparing to vote on this interim spending plan. You know what the vote was? In the House, the two-week extension drew strong support from both parties, with lawmakers eager to avoid being seen as provoking a government shutdown. In the end, 231 Republicans and 104 Democrats voted for this cheesy-ass two-week extension. Six Republicans and 85 Democrats said no. You know what I would suggest? Get a list of that 85 Democrats that said no. And keep that handy. Keep that list handy. For future reference, right? So there you have it. That's all the news that's fit to spit on this program. One of the interesting facts about the House and the Senate, the Republicans that are in there, is the fact that they don't believe in science. A lot of these people are religious nutbags. All Christian, Catholic and Protestant, they're all Christian. I don't think there's, what is there, one Muslim in the U.S. Congress? Is it one? Just, you know, what's his name? From Minnesota. A lot of Jews in the House and the Senate, but you know, the Jews are pretty much in favor of science and rational thought, except where it concerns the Palestinians. Then they become as insane as fundamentalist Christians. But that's a whole different topic. Let's stick to this one, Mike. Okay. So many of the Republican members of the House and the Senate are Christians who cannot accept anything with a scientific basis, because everything with a scientific basis starts with the age of the Earth, the age of the universe, and evolution. Everything is built on that. Everything. Tell me something that isn't. So if they can't accept that, then they can't accept anything that is fact-based. It's all got to be what their insane God said, or their poor bleeding Jesus said, or... But never facts and truth and rational thought and logic and inductive reasoning or deductive reasoning, logic, none of that. What's it say in the Bible? Is pretty much the bottom line. Now, there's a reason I'm bringing this up. And I'll tell you in a minute when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Babylon, don't make our rules. All right, all right.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
So the reason I brought this up about fact-free Republicans, Judith Warner writing in the Sunday edition of Sunday Magazine, New York Times Sunday Magazine, in this this feature that's in there every week, The Way We Live Now, and they have different writers and so on and so forth. But she was writing about how Obama has made scientific innovation very, very important in his plans for what he calls winning the future. Remember during his State of the Union address last month when he talked about this is our generation's Sputnik moment? I didn't know. I wasn't quite sure what he meant. I knew where he was trying to go with it. Well, no, I don't. I still am not sure because, you know, I was around when, during the Sputnik moment. I was in high school. Oh, my God, you're that old. I was in high school during the Sputnik launch. And the only moment I remember was absolute panic from quarter coast to coast, border to border, across the fruited lane plane. God, what's going on tonight? Too much prune juice. Just panic. Sputnik. Oh, my God. They put a thing, the Russians did, in space, and it's going round and round. Well, you know, the Republicans immediately, that generation's teabaggers, said, well, that can't be because, you know, things don't orbit around the Earth. or something. So when Obama referred to Sputnik moment, you know, I had a hard time trying to figure out what he was talking about. Was that meant as a... was that something we were supposed to be worried about? Or was he trying to say, look, because then what happened next after the Sputnik moment, after the panic, everything switched to science and math in this country. Oh, my God. Did it switch? Actually, I wasn't in high school. By the time I got to high school, everything had been switched to science and math. And I can remember in my class, if you asked the boys, and it was still a boy thing back then, well, what are you going to do when you get out of high school and college there, Raymond? And the answer would always be, well, I'm going to be some kind of an engineer. I'm going to be a mechanical engineer. I'm going to be an electrical engineer. I'm going to be something engineer. Always an engineer. Always an engineer. The girls, you ask the girls what they're going to be. I'm going to marry an engineer. Well, that's the way it was back then, see. So maybe what Obama was referring to as Sputnik moment was we would all wake up now and realize that the Chinese are coming. The Chinese are coming. The Chinese are coming. They're going to own everything. They're going to dominate all the space junk. Pretty soon will be Chinese, if it isn't all now. Everything. Exploration, innovation, science, everything will be Chinese. And, of course, it'll be a fascist kind of uniquely Chinese totalitarian fascism that it's just too scary to contemplate. Never mind. Don't even think about it. So anyway, Judith Warner's writing about this, and she says it would be easier to believe in this great moment of science reawakening if, and she points out, more than half of the Republicans in the House of Representatives and three-quarters of the Republican senators say that the threat of global warming as a man-made and highly threatening phenomenon is at best an exaggeration and at worst an utter hoax. The whole thing is a hoax. That's what Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma, the ranking Republican on the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee, that's how he puts it. The entire global warming as man-made destruction is a hoax! Doesn't exist. So, As the Center for American Progress put it, they describe a troubling new reality, the rise of the Tea Party, and its anti-intellectual, anti-establishment, anti-elite worldview that has brought two things, a mainstreaming of anti-scientific thought and a radicalization of anti-scientific thought. You know, you always have people on the fringe. Hell, the left had it a couple of generations ago, the challenge to what constituted truth. But that was in the social sciences. I don't remember the left ever challenging applied science or the hard sciences. There was never anybody on the left that I'm aware of that said, no. The universe is only 6,000 years old. There are a lot of people on the left in academia that said, wait a minute, the Western canon in literature, why is it the way it is? What about women writers? People of colored, which was a way of saying colored people. What about their writing? You see, so there was a lot of challenge against the establishment on the left, but it was in the social sciences. Radical psychologists, radical writers, but never where it concerns science. We'll be right back.
Algebraic bliss. Let's start with something simple, like 1 and 1 ain't 3. And 2 plus 2 will never get you 5. There's fractions and my subtraction, and X don't equal Y. But my homework is bound to multiply. Math sucks.
To Mike Malloy, turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
It's 25 before the hour. By the way, this hour is sponsored by Nicholas Thomas. Thanks, Nick. This hour is sponsored by Nicholas Thomas. Thanks, Nick. Okay, fact-free science. More than half the Republicans in the House and three-quarters of the Republican senators disagree with the idea that global warming, global climate change is a result of human misuse of the environment and the continued dumping into our biosphere, all these poisons and chemicals and gases. No, no, they say. Now, as the article in the Sunday Times Magazine pointed out, you know, the politicization, that's a long word, politicization of science isn't particularly new. Remember during the Bush administration when any agency that had anything to do with scientific results, measurable results, whether it was poison in the water or carbon dioxide in the atmosphere or whatever it was, you know, chemicals in people's bloodstreams from environmental toxins, whatever it was. During the Bush administration, these government agencies had to adjust reality to fit the politics of Dick Cheney and George W. Bush. Remember that? So, as Judith Warner points out, in response to that, and with a renewed culture war over the very nature of scientific reality clearly brewing, the Obama administration tried to initiate a preemptive strike earlier this winter, issuing a set of what it called scientific integrity guidelines, which is aimed at keeping the work of government scientists free from ideological pollution. Now, you wouldn't think that would be necessary, would you? This is not the Middle Ages. Well, I guess, or the Dark Ages. I guess at some point they're going to be seen that way. But right now, we don't see it as that. But we have a bunch of gobbledygook, mumbo-jumbo, sky spook people who have taken over to a great degree, not just the federal government, but the state governments. Can't teach evolution, teach creationism. Can't teach any of the natural sciences, because all of the natural sciences have some basis somewhere in either or both evolution or the age of the environment that we're studying. I don't care what it is. When they find a 11,500-year-old mummified baby, as was found recently in Outer Mongolia, someplace in the Chinese sphere, the Christians have to deny that that's a fact. And any kind of scientific information that derives from an examination of that mummified corpse is invalid, because they will tell you, and I guess the fundamentalist Jews and Muslims would tell you the same thing, that the universe is only, what, 6, 7, maybe 8,000 years old? How could there be an 11,000-year-old fetus? Mummy of a child. That's how sick this has become. So what are you going to do? Since taking over the House of Representatives, the Republicans have packed science-related committees with these geeky bastards who refute such basic findings as the reality of global warming and the threats of climate change. They just, that's not true. It's not true. For example, Fred Upton, the head of the House Energy and Commerce Committee, has said outright that he does not believe that global warming is man-made. John Shimkus of Illinois, who also sits on that committee, as well as the Subcommittee on Energy and Environment, has said that the government doesn't need to make a priority of regulating greenhouse gas emissions because, sit down, here it comes, as he put it last year, quote, God said the earth would not be destroyed by a flood again, end quote. And whoever crawls out of the muck and the slime and the filth of the Republican conservative electorate, whichever one of these crazed creatures claws his way, and it's going to be a he, to the presidential nomination on the Republican Party, they are going to have to completely embrace climate change denial if they want to be nominated by this crazed mass of lunatics that is now called the Republican Party. Mitt Romney, Tim Pawlenty, Mike Huckabee, who are all nuttier than you know, last Christmas's fruitcake. They really are. But they all once expressed some support for action on global warming. Not now. Oh, no. No, 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 no. I didn't mean it back then, folks. I really didn't. Now, elect me president. You know, it says in the Bible, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Daniel J. Weiss, a senior fellow and director of climate strategy for the Center for American Progress. Ooh, it's got that progress word in it. Watch out. Says that it is now a required practice for Republicans eager to play to the conservative base to totally deny that anything untoward is happening to the biosphere of this planet. Mr. Weiss, or Professor Weiss, says, quote, opposing the belief that global warming is human-caused has become systematic, like opposition to abortion. It is seen, Mr. Weiss goes on, as another way for government to control people's lives. It's become a cultural issue. End quote. So, these are the people who've taken over the government. It's bad enough that they're all bought and paid for street whores. No offense to sex workers, really, no offense. Every single one of these Republicans bought and paid for, their very asses, along with the rest of their anatomy, belongs to people like the Koch brothers in corporate America. They are owned outright. Not unlike Africans hauled over here. Oh, now don't get your bowels in an uproar and say, how do you compare slavery to blah, blah, blah? These members of Congress are owned as surely as black people were owned by white people 200 years ago in this country. There, of course, there's a lot of differences. Of course there are. The white people running around the halls of Congress think they're doing God's work. They really do. They're doing the corporation's work. But this is where we are. How, if you are a rational human being, the question becomes, how do you survive, much less progress, in a political environment, a cultural environment, that has as its starting point a denial of science? How do you do that? How do you do that? I mean, every flu season, there is just all the evidence that these crazy bastards need about evolution. Because every flu season, that little old booger, whichever one it is, there are scores of them, if not hundreds, of these little flu viruses just floating around in the infinite. And every single year, they all have a meeting and say, well, let's evolve just a little bit because, you know, they developed a vaccine last year. Ha ha! Let's get them this year. And there it is every year if you need something, anything.
Yeah, but Mike, flu viruses aren't, living things.
Okay. I don't know, man. I just think we are in a world of craziness up to our eyeballs. I really do. And it can only get worse. And you see these, it's 99.9% white people in the halls of Congress, whether it's House or Senate, walking around talking this trash. You know, I get into a race identity thing all of a sudden. You know, I'm not supposed to do that because I'm white. You know, we don't have to do that. You know, we're on top. We always have been on top, right? Don't have to do that. But all of a sudden, I get into this race identity thing and I think, oh, my God, white people on this planet are in the minority. We've got all the nuclear bombs, but we're in the minority. Why don't you white people shut your goddamn mouths? Don't you understand how you're embarrassing me? You're a discredit to your race. Isn't that weird? I don't know where that came from, but I see these white people. Every time I see Jim Inhofe or some of these people, I just, you know, I want to immediately, I don't know, grab some cork and burn it and start, you know, scraping over my body. Here, let me be black. Let me just get out of this. Oh, my God. I don't want to, you know. We'll be right back.
Famous for no reason. Mary Antoinette enjoyed her cake. The Hindenburg was a giant Zeppelin. His makers made a minor oversight. Before they filled it up with explosive gas, they should have fixed the nose smoking light.
Yet tonight, how much he hates these people. It's more Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Nick Thomas, who has no message. He just sponsored the hour. Thanks, Nick. Much, much, much appreciated. So, where are we? The brain-dead Republicans. Now, if they deny human influence in global climate change, you know, these are the same slick willies who, what was it, last winter? Not this winter, last winter, when it was snowing so much and they all went, ho, ho, ho!
somebody built an igloo or something out on the in Lafayette Park across from the White House, and somebody put a sign on it. Al Gore's global warming power, something like that. They just slap their asses off and slap their knees and everything. It probably will not affect them unless this really accelerates the way a lot of scientists now think it is accelerating. Take a look at the weather. Oh, my God. So it's not going to affect these right-wing morons, but it will absolutely destroy their grandchildren or their grandnieces. Or it is a guarantee that their DNA is not going to make it into future generations. And let me tell you something, right-wingers, that's what the whole game is about. All this other stuff is just, I don't know, stupid stuff. The only real driving force in your universe, and you don't realize this, you stupid asses, the only real driving force is to get your genetic material into another generation and then another and another. That's what it's all about, boys and girls. Boys, you know. So this guarantees that you cease to exist. See, if there's no record of you anywhere, no genetic print, you never existed. This is kind of the personalizing the horror of what Jonathan Schell wrote about 25 years ago of global thermonuclear war and the resulting nuclear winter, that everything would die on the planet. Everything. The planet will become a dead planet. Nothing, no record of anything, everything destroyed. So that by the slightest chance that some sentient organism would come here in some future billion years from now, there would be no record of anything. So consequently, you know, if you don't exist in memory, you don't exist. What, is that too heavy for you right-wingers? You know? So the denial of science and everything, but primarily in the environmental sciences. I mean, this is our nest, and we've turned it into a sewer, and we are going to end it. What the? And the Republicans say, well, that's what God meant when he said, "I give you dominion over the earth." All right, boys, go destroy it. Kill it. God damn it. Go kill it. You crazy. You know, it's like the earth. If there were a God, this would be the repository for the creatures in the universe that were incapable of moving forward, incapable of growth, incapable of love, incapable of thought, incapable of, you know, like a dumping ground. Now, I have a story coming up here in a minute when we come back from the break that you might think is a headline from The Onion, but it isn't. And I don't care what you do, you've got to stick around for this after we come back at the top of the hour. When I saw this, somebody said, this is from a Right Wing Watch website, and I just about... I don't know. I don't know whether to laugh or start pounding nails into my knees. Oh my God, can this be real? So we're going to do that when we come back. Before we bug out here at the top of the hour, I just want to mention, I don't usually do obituaries on the program unless it's somebody, you know, that has really, really made an impression on most of us. Jane Russell died, as you know, at the age of 89. Did you know that she became an extreme right winger? Oh my God, she was, politically speaking, you know. But on the same obituary page today in the New York Times, there's a picture you've probably seen. It's from the album, The Freewheelin' Bob Dylan. It was an album that came out in the early 60s. And it's a picture of Bob Dylan walking down the street in Manhattan in the slush and the muck, and he looks like it's winter, he's freezing to death. And he has his arm around a woman, and a very young woman, she has her arm around him, and they're just cuddling. And the woman's name is Susie Rotolo. Susie Rodolo. She died the other day. She was 67. When the picture was taken, she was 17. Dylan was 20. In his memoir, Chronicles, Volume 1, published in 2004, Dylan wrote, when he got to New York and he met her, he said, right from the start, I couldn't take my eyes off her. She was the most erotic thing I'd ever seen. She was fair-skinned and golden-haired, full-blood Italian. The air was suddenly filled with banana leaves. We started talking, and my head started to spin. Cupid's arrow had whistled past my ears before, but this time it hit me in the heart, and the weight of it dragged me overboard. Whew. Susie Rodolo, she was the inspiration for Don't Think Twice, It's All Right, Boots of Spanish Leather, One Too Many Mornings, Tomorrow's a Long Time, Ballad in Plain D, just on and on and on. So that picture, you've seen that picture. It's iconic. It's kind of like the picture from the Woodstock album of the couple standing there in the rain and the mud with a blanket around them, a quilt around them. That picture, if you get a chance, look at it. Susie Rodolo, Rotolo. Rest in peace, Susie. This hour is sponsored by Francis, ex-sailor in the chat room. Francis, the message, cannot imagine living through these times without hearing your take on things. Well, thank you, Francis. Ex-sailor from the chat room. Thanks, Francis. Okay. Before I get to that, the weirdest story I think I've seen ever since I've been doing talk radio, the weirdest, and it's all true. It looks like a headline from The Onion, but it's not. But Roz sent this to me. Mike, what kind of simpletons work for CNN these days? She's talking about the on-camera people. As soon as I read that, I knew where Roz was going to go. Brooke Baldwin, I guess. Brooke Baldwin, the one who took over for Rick Sanchez. Remember, he was her arm candy, or his arm candy, when they were both doing the show together, because Brooke Baldwin is not the brightest bulb in the marquee at all. Roz writes, the young lady who took over from Rick Sanchez, all wide-eyed and mystified. She is. You ever notice that? Ever watch her in the afternoon when Sanchez used to be on? I'm stunned by the the monumental naivete and ignorance of this young woman. It's just, you can't comment on it. You have to see it. Anyway. Ross writes, that young lady took over from Rick Sanchez, all wide-eyed and mystified, declared that Gaddafi actually spoke English in an interview and not Libyan. She said that on camera.
Speaking of stunned, you know, Rick Sanchez wasn't exactly lighting up Broadway with his brilliant...
Didn't he
taser himself with a stun gun on camera?
But he would never have said Gaddafi spoke English and not Libyan.
No, but he has some scientists during one of those hurricanes.
You defending him?
No. I'm just saying he's equally challenged because I remember when he defended the or asked the scientist how you said something in English?
Yeah.
How you say that in English?
Well, he was trying to identify with his what he perceived to be his audience. But when somebody is anchoring a news program on CNN and is all shocked because Gaddafi actually spoke English in an interview and not Libyan, you need to take notice of that. Roz adds, somebody should have informed her there's no such language. Arabic is the lingua franca of that country, along with the smattering of Berber, English, and a few other languages. I really think... Roz writes, they hire people on their looks and not brain power. She has made several childlike pronouncements with legs crossed and trying to look all innocent. Is this what passes for news nowadays? I'm sure to get a good laugh whenever I tune into some of CNN's shows. Spitzer in the evening is a big improvement, though, and more than makes up for the other dingbats. Sorry, but it really gets my goat wondering how these people get their jobs. Surely a high school education must be required at the very least. I don't know, Roz. When I went to work there, I don't think... Well, that was a long time ago. He doesn't speak Libyan. That is so Brooke Baldwin. That is so Brooke. Hey, Brooke! No, he doesn't speak Libyan. Hey, I already said that. Ex-sailor from the chat room, Francis. Francis Leckie sponsors this hour. And Francis writes, I can't imagine living through these times without hearing your take on things. And again, that's very kind. All right. Let me see how to begin this. Janet Porter. Well, this is what it says at rightwingwatch.org. Porter schedules a fetus to testify in favor of the heartbeat bill. You're familiar with the heartbeat bill. When Janet Porter is involved in something, you know it's just a matter of time before it goes completely off the rails. It happened with her 2007 values voter debate when a choir sang, "Why should God bless America?" while religious right leaders asked questions to empty podiums representing the Republican candidates who skipped the event. And it happened again with her May Day prayer rally at the Lincoln Memorial, which left her facing $70,000 in expenses and cost her her daily radio show. It was only a matter of time before her already bizarre heartbeat bill activism in Ohio took a turn toward the surreal. When Porter announced, she is a member of the House of Representatives in Ohio, Porter announced plans to have a fetus testify in favor of this legislation. And she announced, a fetus has been scheduled as a legislative witness in Ohio on a unique bill that proposes outlawing abortions after the first heartbeat can be medically detected. Faith to Action, the anti-abortion group that has targeted Ohio to pilot the measure, called the in utero witness the youngest to ever come before the House Health Committee at 9 weeks old, if you count the time inside the uterus. Faith to Action president, she's not a member of the House. She's the president of Faith to Action, Janet Porter, said the intent is to show lawmakers Who will be affected by the bill, which abortion rights groups oppose? Ohio Right to Life has not endorsed this. An aide to committee chairman Lynn Wachman said a pregnant woman will be brought before the committee, and an ultrasound image of her uterus will be projected onto a screen. The heartbeat of the fetus will be visible in color. Now, just to get this in perspective, Janet Porter served as the co-chair of Mike Huckabee's Faith and Family Values Coalition when he ran for president. So they're going to bring in a willing pregnant woman and actually put the goo on her distended abdomen. Of course, at 9 days, or 9 weeks, 3 weeks, how distended would her abdomen be? Probably not at all. But they're going to put the goo on there, and then they're going to take the ultrasound wand and start pressing on her.
At that age, at that gestational period,
yeah,
you're going to have to do a vaginal ultrasound. You're not going to pick anything up through the abdomen at 9 weeks. I mean, I'm sorry, of course you would at 9 weeks, at 9 days.
Oh, no, this is 9 weeks.
Or 3 weeks.
Yeah, well, this is apparently...
3 weeks is apparently the earliest you can detect a heartbeat, but that would have to be vaginally.
Well, I'm sure that the Republican members of this committee would prefer it to be vaginally, you know, to break up their day a little bit. So a fetus testifying in favor of the legislation... I guess someone will be there to speak feti and explain to them what the fetus... Jesus, God, where do I live?
Coming around. If you're smart, then you better start dumbing it.
Primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. This hour is sponsored by Francis Leckie, whose message is, cannot imagine living through these times without hearing your take on things. Thank you, Francis. You know, when you enter the bizarro world of the Rupert Murdoch terrorist broadcast octopus, when you become a paid consultant to that nest of slime and vipers like Huckabee is, Mike Huckabee, your brain starts to liquefy and it dribbles out your ears and you have to constantly be carrying Kleenex around with you. So that you could reach up and dab over there. Huckabee, the latest proof of this? Fox employee Mike Huckabee insists Obama grew up in Kenya.
Good God.
Not he was born there. In addition to being born there, he grew up there. He was on one of these slimy... New York talk programs, New York City, with all the right-wingers. There's a guy there named Malaberg on WRR. WRR isn't even in New York. It's in New Jersey, I think. Malaberg. Anyway, Huckabee was on Malaberg's show. Huckabee's out promoting another book entitled A Simple Government, written by a simple former governor. Malaberg, he was on Malaberg's program, and he said, having grown up in Kenya, his view of the Brits, for example, very different from the average American. Huckabee said that. Asked about the so-called birther dispute, Huckabee said, I would love to know more. What I know is troubling enough. He said Obama's decision to remove a bust of Winston Churchill from the Oval Office was, quote, a great insult to the British. really? I didn't know that. Huckabee went on, sticking his foot further up his rectal orifice. He said, but if you think about it, his perspective is growing up in Kenya with a Kenyan father and grandfather. Their view of the Mau Mau revolution is very different than ours. It's very different from ours, you moron. It's very different than ours because he probably grew up hearing that the British were a bunch of imperialists who persecuted his grandfather. No, really? Can you imagine someone being told that the British were imperialists? Were colonialists? No. Oh, no. Come on, Mike. Nobody would be that crass and stupid as to insist that the British were imperialists. You're kidding. Let me ask you something, Mike. Have you ever heard the expression? It's from some time ago, but did you ever hear this, you dumb son of a bitch? Did you ever hear somebody say, the sun never sets on the British Empire? Now, what do you suppose that meant, Mike? Did that mean that the British Isles were great big things that covered the whole earth? Or did it mean... I'm starting to choke on my own saliva here. Did it mean, Mike, that the British Empire had been so imperialistic that it planted its flag and its rulers and its viceroys all over the planet? How can somebody be this stupid? Huckabee, you're dumber than an empty shoebox. You are just, you make no sense about anything. But you really want that feet high to testify, don't you, you sorry bastard. And then he sits there with this Malaberg freak on WOR, Malaberg, whatever the hell his name is. And of course, Malaberg is just sitting there just feeding him line after line. Well, what do you think of that? Well, what do you think of this? Well, what do you think of that? I met that Malaberg one time. He looks like somebody who gets his lunches in a graveyard. He looks like somebody who goes to lunch in a cemetery. You know what I'm saying? Huckabee, a one-time Baptist preacher and former governor of Arkansas, said he was not drawn to the birther controversy because if it were true, Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign would have unearthed it in 2008. Quote, and I promise you they would have used it, end quote. Unlike you and the slimy slugs that you hang out with, right, Mike? Oh, Mike. Oh, my God. Imagine being told that the Brits were imperialistic. Good God!
blowing up America one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. What else we got here? Oh, yeah. I've been asked to mention this. A heads up concerning a planned Parenthood rally at the Indiana State House, March 8th. Is today the 1st? So it'll be next Tuesday. This comes from Nicole. If at all possible, it'd be great if you could let your other listeners know there would be an opportunity to let Mike Pence know he is not supported in his home state. The rally will be from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time in Indiana. I'm not sure how the time thing works. You'll have to. I guess Indiana is one of those states that doesn't have Eastern. I don't know. Tuesday, March 8th in Indianapolis. The rally will be from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. And Nicole has Eastern Time here. Let's just say local time, I guess. And if you want more action, more information, you go to ppaction.org, which I guess is Planned Parenthood, right? ppaction.org, ppaction.org. But this is a week from today, March 8th, 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. In Indianapolis, Indiana State House. Okay? What else here? Kate Petrini, our education affairs correspondent, sent this email in this morning. A couple of thoughts she writes after listening to the podcast this morning. First, it's not even a drop in the bucket, but there is at least one American school that still teaches the importance of unions in U.S. history. Actually, make that two. My colleagues at both my current and former school are committed to teaching history from the perspective of social movements. We even teach about Joe Hill and listen to There Is Power in a Union. The protests in Madison are part of our current events lessons right now as well. And second, regarding the caller who discussed Tennessee's plans to do away with teacher certification programs, I can think of one more reason why this appeals to the legislators in that red state. You know that education brings with it the danger of being exposed to those damn liberal ideas, don't you? So why make teachers go through another year or two of higher education? They might get some of that, you know, pro-union, worker rights type nonsense pounded into their heads when they're in constant contact with other educators and aspiring teachers. So, let's do away with the need for those programs. That way, we'll have good little grunts who will be stuck teaching in the Tennessee schools. Why? Because before they'll be able to teach in any public school in almost any other state, they'd have to become certified. It's all just so blanked up. Okay. Part of what she's referring to, email from Susan in Kingsport, Tennessee. Mike, can you give a shout-out to let people know the Tennessee Education Association is having a rally on Saturday, March 5th. That's this Saturday, from 12 to 3 p.m. at the Legislative Plaza to protest the actions of the Tennessee Republicans who seek to curtail bargaining rights. Most people don't know that this is happening here, too, and unless it's the information has got out, it will slip under the radar. You can go to their website, TEA, as in teabaggers, but it's not, teachers.org. The TEA stands for Tennessee Education Association. teachers.org, to get information on this. That's this Saturday. And what's going on, a Republican-backed bill in the state legislature in Tennessee is challenging the rights of teachers to organize into unions in that state. backers of the bill The Republicans say it will improve education in Tennessee and save money for districts. How? Opponents say it will erode work conditions in the state schools and demoralize teachers. Apparently, the Tennessee Education Association, as far as these Republican pieces of human waste are concerned, has gotten too close to the Democratic Party. Oh, well, we don't want that to happen. So Tennessee joins about 10 states across the country that has taken up the debate or have taken up the debate over the role of public employee unions. It says here in Tennessee that focus has fallen squarely on teachers, the only group of public sector workers who have been granted collective bargaining rights statewide in Tennessee. Since that power was given to teachers in 1978, teachers have unionized and formed local Tennessee Education Association chapters in 92 of the state's 136 school districts. The bill now under consideration by these Republican thugs would overturn the law, leaving school districts free to ignore the Tennessee Education Association affiliates. I've never seen anything like this in my lifetime, and hopefully I won't between now and the time I die. This attack. And the fact that the teachers are getting so much of the brunt of this, you know, I've said it before, are most school districts, especially here in the South, just going down the toilet in terms of educational standings among the students? You can't deny that. I mean, by any standard, it's happening here. Is that the fault of teachers, or is it what the teachers have to deal with when they go to class every morning? Come on. Get real. Get real. This morning, Kathy and I went to Molly's public school, and it's in a school district here in north central Georgia that is, I've said this before, having funding problems. They're closing schools hand over fist next school year, consolidating schools. It just so happens that the Parent-Teacher Association at Molly's school is very strong and very active. And this is not a whites-only school. We have kids of just about any race you can think of. It is definitely a middle-class school, although I would say it is lower middle-class to mid-upper middle-class, if you can figure that one out. All income groups is what I'm trying to get at. We went to her school this morning. There was a music program. Molly gets music once a week. She has what they call enrichment. All the students get it. One week it might be music. Another week it might be what, Kathy? Art. Another time it might be language. This is in addition to the regular curriculum. Another time it might just be something in the gym. Don't they have PE every day? This is a school that still believes that the kids should be exposed to music. I mean, this is stunning to me. I have a 32-year-old son who came up in a period of time when art and music was being were being eliminated from elementary public school curricula, because there just wasn't any money. There weren't any teachers. And now it's here in this school, and it's here because the parents support it. There's no money for the kinds of programs in so many school districts that exposes these little first graders. Well, it's first through fifth grade. Well, actually, it's preschool through fifth grade. but exposes the kids to music. And we were, the auditorium at the school is the cafeteria, and they have a stage in there. And there must have been, what, as many parents packed into that auditorium as there were demonstrators at the state capitol here in Georgia last Saturday. Here are all these parents, black and white, upper middle class and not upper middle class, working class, every, you know. And there we all were watching our kids. And there's an actual music teacher there. She's not a, I mean, she doesn't teach other things. She's a music teacher. Putting our little kids through a musical program that went on for 40 minutes. And I was just kind of stunned watching the kids do this. I think about other schools. What do the teachers have to work with when the kids show up for school in the morning?
It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Now, at the website, it was one of the newspapers in Tennessee that had the story about this Republican-backed bill in the state legislature in that state to deny teachers the right to collective bargaining, take it away from them. There was a comment section underneath it. Here's some of the comments. How did they come to believe that what they receive in salaries, health care, and pension benefits are rights and not privileges? They apparently lost sight of the fact that they are public servants. Now, some of these emails are just astonishing because you know that these are parents who are no more interested in schools than they're interested in pissing up a rope. I'm sure, I can tell, trust me on this, they don't go to PTA meetings, they don't support the principals or the teachers, and they probably don't care what shape their kid is in when they drop him or her off at school every day, if they even go that far. You know, how many kids that go to a public school, and I don't care where the public school is, unless it's in some ultra-wealthy neighborhood, how many kids who go to public school have to have some kind of, be part of some kind of lunch or breakfast program in an ordinate number now? And it's not, I mean, when you think about...
those are kids that come from the slums.
No, it's not kids that come from the slums. These are kids that come from what appear to be just your standard middle-class neighborhood, working-class, middle-class neighborhood. There are so many people who are not working now. There's so many people who's just simply... are in financial straits that people who still have a job that pays well just could not fathom, could not understand. Here's another one. We've doubled salaries and benefits for teachers in the last decade. Wisconsin teachers are, quote, averaging $77,000 a year in salaries and benefits. Locally, a majority of the kids can't read proficiently by the eighth grade, and you've got half the black children dropping out before they graduate from high school. I'm sorry, but that's failure, and it's just twice as expensive. As FDR said, there should be no unions in the public sector. The unholy alliance between Democrats and the teachers' union has to end for the children's sake. Can you believe this? Here's another one. No government employee should be allowed to join an organization that extorts funds from the average taxpayers of this country. Back in the 80s, I supported higher taxes for education. Sure you did. Then I started seeing a pattern of abuse from elected officials every other year. Blah, blah, blah. Those elected officials from whom you saw the pattern of abuse, you moron, were all Republicans or Christian coalition types or school board members who got themselves elected so they could gut the curriculum. Jesus, God, I just... I don't know how a school teacher, a public school teacher right now, in these states where they're under siege, can maintain. I believe what Richard Bach said, there's no problem so big you can't walk away from it. And to put up with that kind of harassment and garbage from right-wingers, from anti-science, anti-math, freaks who do nothing to support the teachers, who do nothing to who wouldn't get off their asses to go vote for a school board member unless the school board member was a deacon at their church, then they would set downtown whatever on fire. I hate these people. Oh, did I mention this hour has been sponsored by ex-sailor in the chat room? Ex-sailor, who writes, cannot imagine living through these times without hearing your take on things. Thanks, Francis. That's very kind. Thanks for sponsoring an hour of the program tonight. We do appreciate it. All right, next hour coming up here. The Transportation Security Administration, TSA. I've got a story for you that you'll probably believe, but stick around for that. And from Jeanette, I got this the other night. This can be made into a sign to carry these demonstrations. Don't cut benefits or privatize Social Security and Medicare. Annual income above $106,800 is exempt from the FICA tax. Make the rich pay their fair share. Abandon the regressive taxable maximum, not the disabled and elderly. Now, that would be a big sign, wouldn't it? But it is so simple. The maximum is $106,800 that the FICA tax is figured on, and that's where it stops. Beyond that, you don't pay any more. Why not? Why not? If somebody makes $6 million a year, why don't they pay their FICA tax? How long, if they did, do you think the lie that Social Security and Medicare are in dire straits, how long would that continue? Oh, my. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back momentarily. Again, thanks to our two sponsors tonight, Nicholas and Francis. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. back. 7 past the hour. Hour 3 of the Malloy program tonight. You know, there were a couple of odds and ends here that I wanted to get to. Last night I mentioned about the survey that was taken, or a poll taken by the New York Times, CBS News, about organized labor and collective bargaining and so on and so forth. And I just find it stunning to discover, like I did last night, that I live in a time when a poll returns a number of around 42% of the American public who were involved in this poll, who said they were either undecided about feeling positive or negative about labor unions, or had not heard enough about them, had not heard enough about labor unions. Now, the reason I find that maddening is my age group, which has to span about 20 years, 15, 20 years, we were taught, I've said this before, we were taught about unions because they were such an integral part of the development of this country, the development of the middle class, all sorts of, not just workers' rights, but human rights. Unions at one time were racist. Yes, they were. Until they began to realize what the term solidarity forever really meant. And then they became a force for providing equal opportunity for every worker, man and woman, black, white, gay, straight, Jew, Gentile, whatever, in this country. But the good that unions have done that people don't have a clue about staggers me. When you have rat bastards like Beck and Hannity and Limbaugh and the rest of the pigs that are hired by corporate America to devour your mind, to just turn your brain into tissue paper, it's understandable then why so many Americans don't have a clue as to what labor unions are. But to have 42% of the people surveyed say, well, I don't know, or I haven't heard enough about labor unions, that to me is astonishing. There are some people spinning in their graves. Mother Jones, John L. Lewis, Walter Reuther, even Jimmy Hoffa, probably. You know, just spinning in their graves. Samuel Gompers. I keep coming back to his name. Well, it's because he was the father of the American labor movement. And he was Jewish. Oh, no, really? Regarding this topic, though, Sarah in Little Rock sent this email. Mike, I was listening to your show from last night, and you were talking about the average American's ignorance regarding labor unions. I'd like to share a personal story. Here in Arkansas, there are a number of hoops through which one must jump to get from nursing school student to practicing nurse. One of these hoops I experienced was a corporate-sponsored class on the, quote, evils, end quote, of unions. There were pamphlets. There was paperwork, all of which designed to drill into the reader's head that unions were leftists, quasi-communistic organizations, and were to be avoided at all costs. The instructor of the class even went so far as to tell what she claimed was a true story about a student in a previous class who had questioned the literature and was denied a job, essentially as a direct result of that questioning. She had a really creepy smile on her face as she said this. Arkansas is a so-called right-to-work state, so I voluntarily sat there, kept quiet, and knew the truth. It was a very eerie experience. I wanted to shout, hey, everyone, don't listen to her. Unions built this country. They built the American middle class, which is what we're aspiring to become. In any case, I didn't say anything and talked openly with very few other new employees about the demonizing of the idea of starting a nursing union. The only reason I know as much as I do is because my grandmother worked as a union rep, traveling state to state and organizing new unions. The South especially is very ignorant about the purpose, benefits, or need to unionize. Thanks, for keeping it lit. Sarah in Little Rock, Arkansas. Yeah, corporate America will stop at nothing to prevent the idea of collective bargaining. It's the only force, not government, the only force that has the power, if it's done properly, correctly, and with the idea of a closed fist, it's the only force against just the inherent nature of capitalism, which is murderous. You have to understand that. If capitalism has done anything to develop the American empire, it was done as a secondary effect of capitalism, insofar as the American worker being benefited. Of course, capitalism is a global dominance idea. Nothing is to get in its way. Nothing. If people die, there's not even a pause to say, "Ooh, that's too bad." Not even that. If nations are destroyed, not even a pause to take a look at the dirt where the nation used to exist as capitalism develops a new nation that will be more beneficial to capitalism. The entire Middle East is made up of pretend countries that never existed until capitalism said, "Ooh, I know, here, let's make this Syria." Okay, good. Okay, now let's call this Jordan. Okay. Now, what do we got over here? All right, we'll make that Iraq. That's Iraq. Okay. Now, what else we got? Let me see here. Saudi Arabia. There's a good one. Yeah. The idea that people don't understand what unions are about, it's more than just organized labor. It's more than just trying to make sure that a working man or woman is paid a livable wage for all the blood, sweat, and tears he or she puts into what in so many cases during the union organizing days was a stinking, dangerous, foul, nasty-ass, filthy, life-shortening job. And again, capitalism doesn't care about that. What, your lungs are black? You know, so what? There's a million more of you dumb bastards. Oh, your hand got lopped off in a machine? So what? There's a million more of you dumb bastards. Oh, the factory burned down and all these women were killed in trying to make shirtwaist for it? Oh, well, so what? There's a million more of you dumb bitches. It just goes on and on and on. Capitalism doesn't care. If you live or die, it will step on your child and smash it into the ground. It will flick your grandparents to the side of the road and giggle as they starve to death. It doesn't care. So what's the one power that can stop the predatory nature of capitalism? No, it's not Barack Obama, and it's not the Congress of the United States. The government of the United States, taken as a whole, is a wholly owned subsidiary of capitalism now. You know that. This has been the case since, I don't know, since when? Go back, what, 30, 40, 50 years? Maybe even more, 60, 80? Come on, wake up. Smell the napalm. So what's left? Organized labor, collective bargaining, the ability of a million people, 10 million, 50 million, to say, "No, goddammit, we're not going to do that. No, we're not going to do it, and neither are you." And this is why, essentially, bottom line, capitalism will do anything to destroy organized labor, destroy collective bargaining, and in the process, or prior to the destruction, poison people's minds, if not forcing the education system to ignore it altogether. It's staggering to me, just staggering.
Coast to Coast, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
Past the hour. So one of the most monstrous bureaucracies ever created in this country, of course, was the Department of Homeland Security. I defy anyone to tell me exactly what this collection of misfits and half-wits really accomplishes. This is one of Dick Cheney's Gestapo ideas. You know, get the people used to the idea of first of all, the phrasing, Homeland Security, oh my God. And then get everybody used to the idea of spies every place. Get them used to that. Okay, that's working. One of the subdivisions of Homeland Security that is probably the most egregious is the TSA, the Transportation Security Administration, which is as effective with security as, oh, I don't know, as what? As, oh, God, I can't think of any analogies or metaphors. There's no need because it's such a collection of dolts and idiots. Have you gone through airport security lately? Do you see these half-wits that are allegedly protecting airplanes from being blown out of the sky by checking your luggage and checking your body? The full scan x-ray machines, of course, are being manufactured by a former member of a company whose financial interest is either controlled or very much involved with the former Bush administration official. Jeez, I can't think tonight. Come on, wake up. Hello, Mike! And you know who that was, or who that is, right? You don't? Well, I'm not going to tell you then. How's that? Anyway, the Transportation Safety or Security Administration, TSA, the training these people get is probably about as much training as you get before you go to work sweeping up the grounds at the zoo. I can't imagine what kind of training these people get, if any. The next time you go through their little scanner, the little ding-ding-ding thing, not necessarily the x-ray machine, but the beep-beep-beep machine, next time you go through that, try making eye contact with the always overweight freak who's standing on the other side with his or her little blue and dark blue uniform on, waving you through. Make eye contact with that person. Go ahead. And then smile. Just try it. Not that you'll have to go through the personal pat down, but just watch their face of this moron that you're staring at. Well, you want to hear the latest? A Florida firefighter says he couldn't believe it when TSA agents gave intrusive, you know what that means, pat downs to passengers, including kids who are getting off an Amtrak train, getting off the train in Savannah, Georgia, earlier this month. This guy's name is Lieutenant Brian Gamble of Leesburg, Florida. He posted video of the incident on YouTube. Oh, and the TSA is now apologizing. Oh, is it one of those mealy-mouthed, little wormy-ass apologies? Well, if we offended anybody, we're very sorry if we offended. Lieutenant Gamble also works part-time as a travel agent. Says he was bringing a small group that included other firefighters and policemen to Savannah for a Valentine's Day getaway. They were among 30 or 40 people getting off the train when Lieutenant Gamble says TSA officers ordered everyone into the terminal. You will go to the terminal. Lieutenant Gamble says, quote, they sent us all into a roped-off holding area and said, y'all are going to be searched. Y'all? We were getting off the train, Gamble says. This didn't make any sense. We were getting off the train, not getting on. We were getting off. Once in the area, the holding area, the group was guarded. while TSA officers began doing what Lieutenant Gamble says were, quote, intrusive pat-downs. Now, you know, have you been patted down by these unconscionable jackasses? Have you gone through that yet? I've never been, I think maybe I was patted down once in all the flying that I've done in the past 10 years. And I think that was, what happened? Was that the time they found the gun I was trying? No, there was no gun. I forget what it was. But I'll tell you what, it's almost giggly. You know, when they hit, sir, I don't know about you, but I'm kind of ticklish in certain parts of my body. And when these people come at you with the wand and the hands and they've got gloves on, for Christ's sake, like I'm going to give them something? You know, here they are touching hundreds, if not thousands, of people every day, and they're afraid I'm going to infect them? I should stand there in a body condom, you know, before they even touch me. There's more on this. Stick around. I want you to hear the rest of this.
Talk to me about that one big break. Spread the ear of illusion both far and wide. Keep your contributions by your side.
Strong man, tough man.
Could be a winner, boy, and move quite well.
Strong man, tough man. Strong. Strong man, tough man.
You got your number down.
Strong man, tough man.
Say you're a winner, man, you're just a sinner now.
Gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. So, the story here so far, Lieutenant Brian Gamble, 38 years old, Leesburg, Florida, he put together a small group of friends, firefighters and policemen, and he's also a travel agent, part-time travel agent, and he... It took them all to Savannah, Georgia, for a Valentine's Day getaway. There were about 30 or 40 people getting off the train, Amtrak, and all of a sudden they were surrounded by TSA agents and told to go into the secure area inside the terminal where they all were going to be searched. Keep in mind, this is getting off the train. So, Lieutenant Gamble... Once inside, he began to notice that the guards or the TSA or the Nazi, the Gestapo, the brown shirts, SS, whatever you want to call them, they were doing intrusive pat-downs. When he saw a family with young kids in the lineup, he took out his camera and started filming. He doesn't know the identity of the family. He said the family was in front of us. That's a quote. Continuing the quote, the TSA agents started lifting their shirts and wanding them. End quote. Now, the video's at YouTube. You can find it, I guess. TSA intrusive pat-down, whatever you want to call it. But anyway, Gamble's wife and a female friend were also searched. And he says female TSA officers made them lift their shirts up to their midriffs and patted their bras. Now, these are people getting, I have to keep saying this, these are people getting off an Amtrak train. Lieutenant Gamble says, quote, one guy went through my wife's hand luggage and smelled her perfume and made comments about it smelling good. It was just not professional. It was just weird. My wife was livid. Lieutenant Gamble adds, we thought, this is silly. We're being harassed by the TSA, end quote. Well, it's worse than that, Lieutenant. You're not being harassed just by the TSA because they can. You know, they can ruin a good day for anybody. All they have to do is go tell you to sit in a little room, and then they can check out everything, including your DNA a swab, and anything and everything. That's the power that they have. The USA Patriot Act, the act that established the Transportation Security Administration, the act that established the Homeland Security Administration, all of these taken together means, Lieutenant Gamble, that you better goddamn do what they say, and you better snap too, soldier. I mean, just do it. Don't debate it. They're putting their hands down a 7-year-old's pants. Too bad the kid might be carrying napalm. Nearing the front of the line for his own search, Lieutenant Gamble complained to a TSA supervisor who was standing there. And he says he was told by the supervisor to calm down. Calm down? You stand there and you say, this is kind of weird, isn't it? I mean, we just got off a train and you're searching us, including 8-year-old kids? What, calm down! Well, I am calm. Calm down! I am calm. Lock him up! You know, that kind of thing. Meanwhile, all the passengers' luggage was sitting on the train platform. So, the fireman, Lieutenant Gamble, waved over an officer from the Georgia State Police to point that out. I explained what was going on. The State Patrol officer left for a few minutes and then came back and took 6 of us in our group and said, "Sorry about that. Go get your luggage. You're good to go." Lieutenant Gamble says he would have had no problem with such a search happening on a train. And you see, that's where you screw up, Lieutenant. You wouldn't have had any problem with people getting on a train and searching you. Why? Why not just show them your identification? You're a sworn firefighter. You've taken an oath. You're an American citizen. You're on a train going from Leesburg, Florida to Savannah. You wouldn't have had a problem with being searched on the train? Really? Then may I humbly suggest, Lieutenant Gamble, that you have no business complaining about being searched in the terminal. You see, it's not where you're being searched, Lieutenant. It's the fact that you are to begin with. I think. Lieutenant Gamble said he would have had no problem with such a search happening on a train, quote, "but getting off the train, that was kind of backwards," end quote. Well, in the limited sense that you mean it, Lieutenant Gamble, yeah, it is kind of backwards, isn't it? But, Lieutenant Gamble, you're 38 years old. Can you imagine when you were 7? Can you imagine when you were 7 years old having to stand in a train terminal while some uniformed person came up with something and started probing your genital area? I mean, what would you have thought, Lieutenant Gamble? What would your parents have said? Oh, that's right. We're under assault by terrorists. I forgot. Well, then. So, anyway, Gamble posted this video at YouTube, and the TSA took to its blog over the weekend to explain what happened. They're going to explain what happened. And the TSA's blogger, Bob, that's his name, Blogger Bob. "Hi, I'm Blogger Bob. Please take your pants off." "Hello." "Raise your arms." "Okay. Let me feel your..." "Boy, not bad. Is this your perfume?" "Oh, well, you must work out. Here, let me..." "Oh, that's pretty nice, too." "Damn." The TSA's Blogger Bob writes that what the Savannah train passengers encountered is known as a Viper operation. V-I-P-R. Viper. Viper. You like that? Viper. A randomized search. Quote, Blogger Bob, "where anyone entering an impacted area has to be screened." End quote. An impacted area? The Savannah Amtrak station? That's an impacted area? What's happened there? I used to live in Savannah. Savannah is just sleepy little old southern town. City now. Okay, it's a city. It's a seaport. Okay. It's a seaport where any one of those huge shipping containers coming in could be full of anthrax. If the CIA wasn't busy doing something else that weekend, it could be full of anthrax. It could be full of explosives from Pakistan. There you go. That's a ticket. No, it could be full of. Okay, here you go. It's a nuclear bomb in there. Oh, but wait a second. We're not talking about shipping containers and the port of Savannah. We're talking about a bunch of people coming from Leesburg, Florida, on a train. Coming to Savannah for St. Patrick's Day. You see, Savannah has the second largest St. Patrick's Day festival in, as far as I know, in the United States, only after New York, second only to New York. I don't know how that happened. I have no idea. But I've been there a couple of times, and they have and I'll tell you, the streets, Abercorn Avenue and some of those gorgeous streets where, that movie, several movies were filmed. The streets get absolutely slippery with the vomit because you've never seen more drinking a beer. I mean, it puts New Orleans to shame. At least in New Orleans, they know how to drink without, you know, tossing their lunch. But in Savannah, these are good church-loving Savannah Southern people. They're kind of like the people that were kicked out of Charleston. You know, Charleston and Savannah, they were the two blue bonnet capitals of the old South, right? You know? And they never learned how to drink real good down there in Savannah. So anyway, I digress. The streets get slippery from the throw-up. So I don't know. I don't know if Lieutenant Gamble was bringing his family and his friends up there to everybody get drunk. I doubt if they're going to do that to the kids. There's also a lot of family things to do in Savannah, too. You don't have to just, you know, just guzzle down the beer. But it's an impacted area? Savannah? The Amtrak station? Impacted with what? There are many interpretations, definitions of the word impacted. A lot of people go to a colon specialist because they have impacted problems. Is that what they mean, that the TSA people caused the impactation? Is that a word? The impaction? Is that a word? It's an impact area. Such searches, you see, were stepped up in 2004 in the wake of the Madrid train bombings, in which 181 people were killed, the TSA says. Oh, okay. Well, then that explains it. The Savannah train station, the Madrid train station. I see. Oh, okay, well, why didn't you say so at the very beginning? Before the hour. So listen, next time you travel on Amtrak, especially here in the South, watch out. Watch out, because you may fall into the traps of a Viper operation. V-I-P-R, Viper, and they will want to know, you know, where you're going, where you've come from, and what's in your bag. Okay, this is your luggage. Okay. Spread your legs. Okay, raise your hands over your head. Bring your seven-year-old up here. According to blogger Bob, the TSA's blogger Bob, the Amtrak station was the subject of the Viper operation. So people entering the station were being screened for items on the Amtrak prohibited items list, as seen in the TSA video. I don't know where you see the video, but you'll notice people entering the station were being screened for items, not people leaving the station. I mean, once you've left the station, isn't it safe to make the assumption that if you were planting a bomb or you were taking a bomb on the train, the bomb would still be on the train and you are safely in the station, which is where they start searching you. Meantime, outside, if you are a terrorist, the bomb goes off. And all the evidence is blown. Oh, well. Anyway, blogger Bob at the TSA says the Viper operation in Savannah, quote, should have ended by the time these folks were coming through the station, since, you know, no more trains were leaving the station. We apologize for any inconvenience we may have caused for those passengers. Any inconvenience we may have caused. Rather than saying we apologize for being dumb, brutal bastards who have not a clue as to what to do, so we stick our wands inside people's pants and up their sleeves and down their bras. Hello, I'm your friendly TSA guy. Spread them. The TSA says these passengers, led by Lieutenant Brian Gamble, firefighter, the passengers, the TSA says, did not have to go into the terminal to leave the station. What are you going to do? I've been to the Savannah train station before. Okay, you don't have to go into the station. You can walk across, 20 different train tracks. Heads up, though, because you never know when a freight train is going to come by and crush you. The TSA says the passengers did not have to go into the terminal in order to leave the station. But Lieutenant Gamble says the TSA agents didn't give them a chance. Yeah, remember at the beginning of the report here, as they got off the train, they were ordered to get inside into the roped-off area inside the Savannah train station because, to quote one of these goons, y'all are going to be searched. Oh, come on. Lieutenant Gamble says their apology is kind of lame. I thought this whole thing was very unprofessional, he says, and very shady, end quote. Lieutenant Brian Gamble, Leesburg, Florida. Well, Lieutenant, you certainly have my attention on this type of intrusion, but you got to understand, Lieutenant Gamble, that, you know, this is the new normal. This is the new normal. You decide to round up some of your firefighting and law enforcement brothers and sisters to make a trip up to Savannah, your ass is going to be harassed. You're going to be asked to spread them, show them. This is the new normal. This is George Bush's America. And it's been handed over to Barack Obama. So it's the Bush-Barack Obama America, and nothing has changed. As a matter of fact, things have gotten arguably a little tighter, and it's going to become tighter still, because after all, we're in an endless war on terror. In the meantime, Lieutenant Gamble, not a whole lot of attention should be focused on your plight and that of your family and your friends and your co-workers and the other cops and firefighters, because there is serious business afoot here. We have people to torture. We have people locked up in various prisons around the world that are accused of, Lieutenant Gamble, terrorism, just like you were being searched for to see if you were a terrorist. Did you have anything on you? Did your 10-year-old kid, did the 7-year-olds on the trip, did the other cops and firefighters, did they all have anything on them that could have gotten them renditioned to Syria or, pick one, Burma? That's a good one. Is there any chance, Lieutenant Gamble, that your people had something on them that could be interpreted as being terrorist related? Because that's where we are, Lieutenant Gamble. That's where we are. This war on terror, well, we've got to fight it. We've got to fight it in the trenches. We've got to fight it on the seas. We've got to fight it in the skies. And God knows, we certainly have to fight it in the Amtrak train terminals scattered hither and yon across the fruited plain. We must! Because if we don't, you see, the terrorists win. Oh, my. There are 10 million stories in the Naked City. This has been one of them. I'll see you tomorrow night, Truth Seekers. Take care. Keep it lit. If you can keep it lit discreetly, I'm Mike Malloy.